Hi, and welcome to the 80th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm your host, John Neff, and with me, as they are every week, is Damon Lavrence.
Hey.
And Alex Nunez.
Yes.
You guys sound so not enthused to be here. I know we record late, but still. It's only like, you know, 9:20 in California.
Yeah.
That's great for Damon.
I was going to say, it's not making so much difference for you guys. I only got about 4.5 hours sleep last night, hours.
That would be 8:20 for Damon, just so you know.
Oh, 8:20? Well, yeah. You know, I didn't major in math. Well, we got a lot to talk about today because it was a pretty busy day to kick off the couple busy days to kick off the week. And we're going to start with the biggest news, which is the... Well, unofficial release of the official Nissan GTR pictures that popped up on the web. And I'm going to have to give a little background as to how this happened because it was a very strange day and very strange way these pictures of the Nissan GTR came about.
Yeah, I still haven't heard the story yet, so I'm interested.
All right, so what happened was this morning, Alex found a post on Motor Authority that showed, you know, this big gleaming picture. The first official picture we've seen of the Nissan GTR with the front end, everything exposed and all that. And the Motor Authority post explained that somehow Motor Trend's December cover got out. And it was very strange, I thought. So I actually emailed Angus McKenzie, the editor-in-chief of Motor Trend, and lo and behold, I got a call back, which was awesome. Always cool to be called by the editor-in-chief of Motor Trend. And... basically, he didn't have any idea how Motor Authority got the picture, and I informed him that Motor Trend had somehow released a press release touting the announcement of the Mazda CX-9 as the Sport Utility Vehicle of the Year, which we'll talk about later. And with that release, they included a picture of a cover, which, you know, that doesn't sound too off when you think about it, but it just happens that this cover is of a vehicle that's embargoed by Nissan that we can't talk about. Nobody can talk about until October 24th when it's debuted in Tokyo. And Angus didn't have any idea that this had happened. So, yeah, he said he had to go and call some people in New York. So, obviously, somebody got in trouble for it. But, of course, once something like that is out, it's out for good. So, the picture of the cover started disseminating around the internet. At first, people were saying that issues of Motor Trend had already hit the newsstand, which I don't think was true, and Angus said was not true. As far as he knew, they were still either at the printer or on their way to the mailing house. It all came from this press release. It didn't have anything to do with the magazine arriving early at newsstands or in anybody's mailbox. But of course, once somebody posts a pic, you know other sites are going to consider the embargo completely broken, and that's, of course, what happened. Autoweek published its own pictures that it took at a media event Nissan held a month or two ago in Japan, and then later on, Inside Line released actual pics from Nissan of the car, and that's eventually what we went with and showed everybody were those pics. So, unfortunately for Nissan, because of what I think is an honest mistake on the part of Motor Trend, their, you know, whole surprise... with a Nissan GTR front end, you know, it being masked and everything, was completely blown out of the water. And has there been a vehicle concept or production vehicle in the last, I'd say going back to last December, is there one that has been a surprise that hasn't been completely blown out of the water by an embargo break? I can't think of
we've had
I'm
few,
sure there has been, but...
No, we've had a few that were systematically released by the manufacturer that were really, really hyped up. But I'm trying to think of anything really, really big.
An actual surprise.
Yeah,
like
an actual surprise.
No. I just don't understand, and I've tried to make this point to PR people at manufacturers, is in this day and age, the internet's becoming more and more important. Sure, magazine covers are still great, but their value is waning. And I just think the best way to unveil a vehicle would be to take the Apple approach, the Steve Jobs approach, unveil it on the stage. Nobody sees it beforehand. And then when that happens, it's such a critical mass that day of that car that you'll get good Google rankings for the car's name on the internet. It'll be talked about. I mean, instead of this slow break that happens where it's eked out over weeks beforehand and the effect is watered down, and it's all because they show it to people. Stop showing it to people.
They show it to
you
everybody.
You can't trust people. I don't care if they work for a magazine, for a blog, for a regular website. It doesn't matter. If you show it to one journalist, consider the embargo broken. I don't care. It's going to be broken.
And you know what it is? It's that for the automakers, you know, getting a cover still means a lot to them.
It does, but I think there are people... I know that there are people, PR people, at the manufacturers whose minds are starting to change about that.
Certain manufacturers react better to these things.
Well, I know some people who are willing to give up a cover if it means that they can keep control of the debut. You know? Because right now, if they give the car to a magazine for a long lead and let them shoot it, it doesn't matter. It will get out. Once a bunch of people at that magazine have seen it, they have the pictures, it's on a computer somewhere, it gets published to a server by accident.
Well, not only is it on a computer somewhere, most of the time the piece is written well ahead, so all they really have to do is turn it on.
And that's the thing. I mean, one strategy we've noticed is that some websites, what be they for car magazines or standalone websites, will do that. They'll write like a dummy piece, or they'll just make the page and not have anything on it, and that allows Google's bots to come and crawl over it. Right, and it gets a good Google rank. I mean, it's so shady, but point being, I just think somebody should try the experiment. Take your car, take the production Camaro, show it to anybody. Of course, I'm sure people have probably already seen the production Camaro because it's going to be on covers in January. But just do the Steve Jobs way, man. Do the iPod way. Totally knock people's socks off the day of. Nobody's ever seen it before. Roll it out on stage. You know, it'll be mass hysteria. And that's something that we're so far away from. We're so exposed to these vehicles before they ever get, quote unquote, officially debuted, that going to the auto shows to see them.
The show is a formality now.
Absolutely. They're all debuted beforehand, which is unfortunate for us.
I mean, you go to the show because we, as you know, the people covering the shows get to see it in person and get up close and be able to talk about it and get live shots and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much all done. We've seen, I think, just about everything that's going to be revealed in Japan next week.
Well, and let's, you know, take the Nissan GTR, for instance. What irritates me as a reader, you know, forget the fact that we all work on Autoblog, as a reader of, let's say, these magazines or these websites, is that, you know, Auto Week and Inside Line, they posted their pictures, which technically, you could argue, they broke the embargo. I mean, they're arguing that Motor Trend broke it, so they're just following, but they released a hell of a lot more pictures than what was on the cover of Motor Trend.
Know what's at stake. This is traffic.
So on the cover of Motor Trend, though, it revealed that the car will do 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. I think it revealed a quarter mile and 11.7 second
quarter,
192 mile per hour top speed, and an MSRP below $80,000. So it revealed that information. Now, Inside Line and Auto Week can't reveal more information than that. But they know all the other information. But in their articles, they say, you know, specs are not known. Well, yeah, you know the specs.
They know the specs. Just, they have the press release.
You just can't talk about them.
And we know they have the press release.
Right.
Because the press release can be gotten.
Which to me, as a reader, is irritating only because I know they have the information. I would just rather they say, we have the information, but we can't talk about it because
we have to abide by the embargo.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Which would kind of catch them in a, that would put them in a catch 22 because they would be.
Because they just broke the embargo with the pictures.
With the pictures. Right. So anyway, let's talk about the car itself. So we've seen the front end. It is a little different than the, you know, GTR proto concept and everything we've seen in the video games and stuff. I think it looks pretty great.
I think it looks good too. I mean, a lot of people don't like the fact that it lost the Alice Cooper, you know, eye makeup, you know, under the headlights. And, you know, what are you going to do? They got rid of that. Outside of that, if you look at the GTR Proto and this, the front ends are very... I mean, it's almost the same thing, just minus the extra black in front.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, I think the lines... I guess I'm... I really, really dig the front lip kind of pulling up and up and over the... into the wheel well. But everything else is... I don't know. It kind of rubs me a little bit the wrong way. I guess the Alice Cooper thing I was kind of enjoying, and I was kind of hoping for that because I thought it was going to be kind of distinct.
I just thought the front end wasn't quite as, I don't know, it was a little misshapen for my taste.
Well, what we don't know, now, because it's still rumored, because nobody can confirm anything, is that there are different flavors of GTR that are going to be unveiled. So,
right, well, that's...
are we going to see another one? Yeah, are we going to see one then that has that different treatment? Because they're going to have differentiation.
Yeah, and it's not going to be just a bigger spoiler in the back for each different model.
No, well, they pegged it with, and I wrote up the post, so I should know, but it's been a while. There were two kind of special edition models. One was going to be black, and one was going to be another color. And one was the black edition, if I recall correctly. So, of course, appropriately, it would be black. But I'm not sure if it's going to get, you know, any revised phases or that kind of thing. I don't think they're going to roll out a lot of different editions within the first year or two until it calms down and they've actually got a reason to invest more money.
I mean, they already announced the three, like, models.
Right, but that's that's like a trim level. It's like getting, getting like Lancer.
So they're going to have
that. Exactly. And I don't think that's going to have a really profound effect on the styling. And honestly, I don't know why they would give Inside Line, Motor Trend, and every other magazine that isn't us, not that I'm bitter or anything,
It's all right.
a lesser model if they're going to be showing, you know, the top of the line model in Tokyo. So,
dude, why even include rear seats? Did you see the picture of this in the gallery?
No, I haven't. This is the first time I looked at the site.
I'm all at the gallery now. So.
Yeah. They're totally token rear seats. There's absolutely no leg room.
Well, I mean, all these coupes have token rear seats. I mean, that's just
But if you're a performance car and you want to do 0-60 in 3.5 seconds, why add the weight?
Porsche 911.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
So I mean, listen, the back seats are there for reasons that, you know, for insurance and other kind of crap like that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Insurance.
Why am I not seeing the back seat shots? I don't see any back seat shots.
They're in the gallery.
Yeah, there's one in the gallery.
It's like a pair of speakers, like mounted Viper style between the two seats.
Oh, there they are.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this: do you think the design is an evolution of the Nissan Skylines that we know from Japan? I mean, do you think
you mean of the R34 Skyline?
Yeah.
No, the roofline is similar. The back window is similar. Everything else is just kind of, you know, it's extreme and cartoonish.
Yeah, I can see how people would say that, but this has to be a pretty bold statement.
Oh, absolutely. There's much heritage behind it. They've got to do something really revolutionary. And overall, I think it's a really attractive package. I just think it looks a little bit too extreme for, I don't know, the R34 and my personal favorite, the R32, were still kind of staid means of transport. I mean, they demanded your attention, but they weren't anything that, I guess, if you were, you know, milling around a Tokyo Auto Show, it wouldn't totally cause your neck to spin around. This one
does.
Well,
you could get them in so many different kind of trim levels, right?
Oh,
you could get a pretty staid
one. Absolutely. Like I said, I think it holds true to the original in a lot of respects, just like Nissan did with the 350Z. There's still a lot of cues in a 350Z that you can go all the way back to the 240 with. So
looking at this engine pick, it's pretty obvious, at least to me, that it's a twin-turbo V6.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. and I think what people are guessing, 450 horsepower, that's the number
I
hear.
A pretty good guess.
I think that's a pretty low estimate. I mean,
3.5 seconds is fast.
No, I think it's closer it's closer to 480. If not a little bit higher, and of course,
from my perspective, it's a 500 horsepower car, because this car can't be light. What with the all wheel drive system and everything else, it's going to be lugging around.
Well, exactly.
How much is the gentleman's agreement in Japan still around when it comes to rating horsepower?
That gentleman's agreement is
gone.
It's been gone for a while, right? Yeah.
In terms of the horsepower gentleman's agreement, where they stop at 276?
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's been gone for a while. But just like every other domestic manufacturer, GM, they're underrating their engines pretty heavily.
Of course, and
honestly, if they want to sell this vehicle in the U.S. and actually allow people to get insured for it, they've got to keep it under 500 horsepower. Because at the end of the day,
you can buy a Shelby GT500 or a Z06 and both are rated at 500.
I would just like to interrupt and point out that the Indians just won Game 4 of the American League Championship Series.
Oh, God. Boston's going to lose.
3-1.
One more day, and I don't have to listen to all the shit I'm taking.
Go try.
From all these Red Sox fans. Oh, my God.
Awesome. Anyway, sorry. I just had to say it. Watch it on TV right now.
Anyway, so we've got the wastegates on the intake tracks. We've got two big air filters flanking both sides of the engine bay. The one thing that it's kind of hard to see, and I'm not sure, I haven't really looked at the photos much today, so you guys are going to have to... We've got what looks like the intercool peering kind of right in between what looked like maybe two brake ducts, but is it a front mount intercooler, or are they going to be using two separate intercoolers? That's what I'm kind of interested to see, because you're not seeing this big, fatty front mouth that is on, or front mount rather, that's on a lot of the other
vehicles.
I don't
know. It looks like they have, in the lower bumper, they have two air intakes.
That's what I'm talking about. There's straddling that ducting one. There. So, I'm not sure if they're going to have two separate intercoolers, because if you see on the engine pick, they've got those two air intakes, which could easily drop down and actually house.
Yeah, those intercoolers.
Yeah. But it's not a pretty engine bay by any stretch of the imagination, but it's very purposeful. I really like it. It's actually...
I don't know. I think it's
really
those headers are hot.
Oh, no. I mean, you're talking about the intake or the... Because I can't see the exhaust, at least in the photo I have.
You're
talking
about
the flames up top?
I'm right. Yeah, those six.
Yeah, well, that's
cubes.
What I was just about to bring up is the fact that Nissan has been, and every other manufacturer for that matter, has been notorious, you know, covering up their engines with this dinky plastic. And I got to give props to Nissan saying, hey, look, there's our engine. There's our intake manifold. What's up?
Yeah.
I think that's just cool. Anyway.
Bring it on.
Yeah. And
game on.
It has been brought. What's the red line on it? Did it say on here?
I'm looking at the
looks like it's
right
just
now.
Around 7,000. I'm just seeing one little red tick there.
Yeah, it looks around 7,000, maybe a little past 7. Seven is the red line.
It looks like 7, yeah.
I would guess, yeah, right around 7,500, something like that.
Let's talk about that interior since we're on the topic. It's no Cadillac CTS inside, so...
It's
totally purposeful. No, it's purposeful, and it has, you know, obviously it's got the great big gauges that are eminently readable, and it has that the GTR screen that has the, you know,
which
the, you know, it's like the space shuttle
remains inside. The state trick as hell.
Yeah,
the GTR logo is certainly big enough on the steering wheel. Jesus, anyway.
I didn't quite notice it. Oh, yes, there it is.
aren't those like toggle switches at the bottom of the center stack?
Yeah, the things at the bottom of the center stack, Damon, in the gallery.
Are these?
Oh, you know what? I'm reading them. One says snow, one says comp, and then one says off. So it's probably something for the traction control system.
I'm sure it is. How the hell are you reading that, man?
one of the pictures is a close up of it.
Oh, okay.
There's a close up photo.
There it is. Cool.
And that's. I mean, I'm not crazy. That's an automatic, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely an automatic.
I haven't heard anybody even mention an automatic with them.
Oh yeah,
that's it's got paddles. It's got paddles on the wheel.
Yeah, that's been all over the place.
Has it?
Yeah, no, as a matter of fact, the...
not a DSG or anything.
No, our friends over at GT Channel were reporting on... there was a press event, or not a press event, rather, a internal media event, basically, for the PR people, and they only had automatics on hand. The 6-speed manual is not going to be coming out for a certain amount of time afterwards.
Oh, what the hell? I wouldn't want this car with an automatic.
If it's a good enough gearbox... I'm sorry, if it can be as quick as...
If it's like a dual clutch, like a DSG. Yeah. That's totally different than an automatic to me.
Yeah, no, and there's, I think, you know? I don't think that's going to be much of an issue. But anyway, so we've got different traction control settings. Wow. Yeah, I mean,
the interior is all business.
Yes,
is all business.
Exactly. And when you say, you know, it's not a CTS, totally agree, but that's not the purpose. The purpose of the CTS is to go around
the
corners.
The last GTR was not exactly beautiful inside either. So,
but at the same time, don't they want this to be like a livable supercar? And you don't want to start off on the same bad foot that the Corvette has perpetually lived with, which is its main fault is that it has a horrible interior. And people actually use that as like, I'm not going to get a Corvette. I'd rather have a Porsche.
They use it as fodder against the Corvette.
And
Corvette eats their lunch, you know.
Right, exactly. You know, does Nissan even want to bother with this? I mean, I would have put some more effort into the interior to make it live up to the style standard set by the exterior.
Yeah.
I have a feeling Nissan knows it's going to sell pretty much all of these.
Well, that's a given. Yeah. I mean, that's a total given. Although, you know, you never know, long term, 3 or 4 years down the road, this thing has to have a business case past the buzz of the first year.
And it will.
First of all, this thing is an instant legend in Japan the second it hits there. So no matter what happens, the GTR nameplate is so important to Nissan. There's your business case, you know, right there.
Well, Damon, you're going to be live in Japan next week to see it unveiled, and you're going to get us tons and tons of pics.
Actually, no, I won't. Trust.
You won't?
No, I won't.
Please?
No, actually, I'm not covering Nissan.
Who is?
Justin is.
Oh, Justin, yeah, okay.
Justin is, but no, I'll be on hand for all of Toyota's wonderfulness.
Oh, yay.
Yay. And
wow, you can see the super chair. You
know. Yeah, exactly. No, I knew you wanted that many pictures of it. Really, really good pic, so that's where I'm going to. No,
well, you at least have to review.
I want a picture of Damon in the chair is what I want.
And then you'll get a picture of Damon being thrown out.
Yeah.
And then I want a picture of Damon and Justin racing those Suzuki Pixie pods through the show hall floor.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of disappointed. The only thing I'm really was excited about seeing that I'm actually marked down on our schedule for is the Evolution, and that's been already unveiled. Okay,
that's all out.
Yeah. All news.
Man, anyway, can we
all
move
right,
on?
Let's, yeah, we can totally move on. Other big news today: Consumer Reports released the results from its predicted reliability survey, and you know, regardless of what you think about Consumer Reports and its method of testing, how it gets subscribers to fill out a survey about the vehicles they own, and all of that stuff, regardless of what you think about that, today's results were pretty surprising because Toyota got hit really hard, and
important Toyotas got hit hard.
Right. We're not talking about like, well, what's an unimportant Toyota?
Well,
the Tacoma. I guess that would be
maybe. I mean,
so anyway, the vehicles that got hit were the Toyota Camry V6, the Toyota Tundra V8 four-wheel drive, and the Lexus GS all-wheel drive. All three of them
were dropped
from the recommended list and received below average ratings.
The Tundra's a big deal. The Camry is that is just, you know, that was felt all the way to Japan because.
Oh, you have... I can't imagine.
You know, there were
the
people throwing the furniture in their offices at the Toyota headquarters in the U.S. after that.
Absolutely.
Well, this was a very unpopular post. Only 102 comments? That's
yeah, only 102.
If you mentioned Consumer Reports, people go completely apeshit.
I think one really important thing to point out is that aside from affecting consumers' view of these three individual vehicles, Consumer Reports decided that they would no longer give every Toyota vehicle a free pass on predicted reliability based on
past
Toyota's
performance.
Right, based on
which
Toyota's
should
past
be the
performance.
Which should be the standard anyway. How can you apply anything like that? I mean, I like the guys at Consumer Reports, and those are serious people, and they do like cars. But that practice was bullshit to begin with. I mean, you have to. It's really good that they're not doing that.
Well, we dinged them back in August when they did it with the Tundra.
The truck comparo. Yeah.
And it obviously blew up in their faces. We made the argument then, and they responded, but we made the argument then that, you know, the Tundra is a brand new vehicle built at a brand new plant, and it's already had camshaft issues.
It's completely new,
right? And
it has nothing to do with the old Tundra.
And you're
the
giving
old Tundra
it a
could
free
have been
pass.
The greatest vehicle in the history of engineering.
And this does
and
not
it means
share,
nothing
it
for the
does
new
not
Tundra.
Share a single part with the old Tundra. So, and now they finally come about and say, okay, well, our subscribers tell us that their Tundras aren't very reliable, so we're going to downgrade it and not going to, you know, give Toyota vehicles a free pass. So I think that's good.
Novel concept. That should be the standard for, never mind, not just Toyota. That should be the standard across the board. I mean,
so the big deal about this is that Toyota has obviously, its image has been built around its quality. And I think that even though it's had a couple slip-ups in the past year or two, this is the first major uppercut to the chin in its image of being, you know, the most reliable vehicle sold, the best built vehicle sold. And another good point, Ford did really well on the surveys. And I mean, we've been, I think, reporting on how much Ford has been trying to improve its quality, whether people see that or not.
Which Fords came up big on the survey?
Well, the Fusion and the Milan and the MKZ all have been flawless so far. They have had no recalls.
Those triplets, pretty much.
But also, one of the Ford F-150s, I think the two-wheel drive model, that was also listed most reliable along with the Fusion and the Milan. And in general, aside from the, you know, Super Duty with the Power Stroke engine, I can't think of any Fords that have had, like, you know, massive recalls or huge issues lately. So, you know, to move that beyond Ford, even, you know, GM has had major strides in quality, too.
Although GM took a shot on the Tahoe and the Yukon, I think, according to the thing.
Which is sad, because those are new models, so you'd hope that they'd be better. But I think... this is a huge shakeup in the industry, because this isn't like, you know, a car magazine taking a shot against the Tundra saying it's not reliable, and then, of course, all of its car crazy subscribers read it and that's that. This is Consumer Reports. It bypasses the enthusiast and goes straight to the car shopper. So car shoppers are now reading that the Toyota Tundra, the Toyota Camry, and a Lexus are all not recommended, are all below average in predicted reliability.
Yes.
Which is Camry, number one selling car in the United States, which, is that going to last long now? I don't think so. There's just competition.
Yeah, and you have a brand new Accord that everybody says is pretty great that I've talked to that's driven it.
And dude, we don't know the effect of the Malibu bomb that's about to drop.
I think the Malibu's going to be a big deal, guys. I mean, they had one not drivable at the GM thing that I went to. Did they have one of yours that you went to, John?
Yeah, they did. And I walked around it.
It was unlocked. I mean, you could climb into it and all that fun stuff. I mean, the car's really nice.
It is.
I'm going to disagree with both you guys on that one. I think the Malibu was shooting for the Camry and the Accord, and the Accord's just been changed. I don't think GM has raised their game up to that level yet.
I think you're probably wrong, because the variety of powertrains are going to be offered, and the unbelievable variety in terms of the interior and the coolness of the interior design, that's going to help them sell cars.
You know, I think, well, one thing I think that the Malibu has over the Accord is style. I think it's more stylish in a much different way.
The Malibu's interior is better than the Saturn Aura's interior.
Oh, no, and this is coming from a guy, by the way. I can't stand the new Honda Accord's front end. But then again, I think the Malibu's back end is horrendous, so...
I don't think it's horrendous. I just think it's kind of unstyled. It's just not...
Both the Malibu and the Accord, in person, to me, look much better than either one does in pictures.
Actually, I saw a Honda Accord in person on the road, and I didn't like it.
There's three in my neighborhood already.
The headlights, you don't see this in pictures, but you know how headlights nowadays, they stick out in a really weird way? You know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I was surprised by how much more I like the Accord sedan in person.
Well, let me tell you this, too. The one ace in the hole the Accord has is cylinder deactivation on its V6 engine, which is...
Yeah.
I think that's totally unique. And it's going to get wicked gas mileage.
Yeah, they do that on the Odyssey, too.
I mean, the Malibu will be lucky if it beats that with its, you know, mild hybrid, because that's insane, especially if people driving mostly on the highway.
More interested in than the hybrid is when they come out. It's not going to be out immediately. It's coming later. Is when you can get the four-cylinder with the 6-speed automatic.
Yeah. Yeah. Although that's going to be a big car for a cylinder. For a four cylinder. That better be a beefy four cylinder.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I drove the Aura Green Line, which is basically a four, you know, it's a four cylinder with the electrical assist. It's not like I don't know how much difference it's going to make when you strip the, you know, the electric motor out of it. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling it's going to be fine for most duties.
I think it's fair to say that Toyota's spot as the number one selling car in the United States is going to fall.
And so Toyota's huge, and now they're seeing the problems that come with being huge.
Yeah.
That Ford and GM have been dealing with. It's just new for Toyota.
Well, and the car that's going to replace it is either going to be the Accord or the Malibu. It's not going to be the Fusion, because Ford just can't build enough of them to take that spot. They can't build 450,000 Fusions because they have to split it up among three brands. So count the Fusion out. And it's, you know, it's a little bit smaller, and it's not, I don't know, I don't think people cross shop the Fusion and the somewhat larger mid-sized sedans. I mean, the Accord is a large car now.
The Accord is big now.
The Accord is in the same class as the new Taurus. I mean, it's a large car by the EPA. So I think in the mid-size segment, there are those factions, those fragments of kind of a big mid-size and a medium mid-size. And I think the Fusion is more a medium mid-size. So it's gonna be between the Malibu and the Accord, because now the Camry is just dated, you know? And it's getting hit by these low reliability, you know, claims from Consumer Reports of all places, which is just like, you know, the worst possible hit you could get.
That's brutal.
I'll be interested to hear if they respond.
Well, just watch for that Toyota Open Road blog and see what they say.
Oh, good call. Good call. I'll probably check that while we're talking. All right, let's move on to, real quickly, we mentioned it before, Mazda CX-9 is Motor Trend's SUV of the year. And let me give you the competition that it beats. Buick Enclave, mm-hmm. Toyota Highlander, and Land Cruiser, the Land Rover LR2, Hyundai Veracruz, Jeep Liberty, and the Jeep Patriot, the Nissan Rogue, which, by the way, calling that an SUV is absolutely insane, the Saturn View, and the Subaru Tribeca. So there's some really good SUVs in there.
You have a bunch of seven-seaters, which is really the fair basis for comparison against the CX-9.
Buick Enclave, I'm surprised, did not win, quite honestly. I have not heard
about it. Have either of you guys driven the CX-9?
I've been driven.
No, I haven't been in it at all.
Oh, in a CX-9? No, I haven't been in a CX-9 at all. No.
I drove the Enclave. The Enclave is nice, but I'm very curious to drive the CX-9.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's a very different experience than the Enclave.
I'm just really surprised, because I've been in a CX-7, which is really just like, you know, a 4/5 CX-9. In looks, at least, and it's great, but it's very sporty, and I wonder if that translates to the CX-9. I mean, it had a pretty stiff suspension for what I thought would be like a family car. So the interior is lots of plastic. It's not necessarily cheap plastic, but you know when you just have plastic, black plastic everywhere, you just get that cheap feeling, regardless of how high quality it is, because it's so overwhelming. And the Buick Enclave, though, doesn't have that. I mean, it has, you know, about 18 different textures in its interior.
Yeah, you have a lot of wood, very nice, you know, very nice looking shapes on the interior on the Enclave.
I thought it'd be a game changer, you know?
Quiet and comfortable. It's really nice.
I guess I thought they chose this on the basis of how much it affects its segment. And it seems like the Buick Enclave kind of moves the segment forward more, because it's from a company that absolutely was not a player before, and all of a sudden has one of the top contenders in the segment of, you know, seven seat entry level luxury SUVs.
Was the Enclave the only one of that GM trio in the competition?
Yeah. Well, I think the others were technically released a year before. So that's right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
How does the Nissan Rogue get in there? How is that considered an SUV against seven seaters?
Well, I mean, the Saturn View is in there, and the Saturn View is more crossover than SUV.
But the Nissan Rogue is a Sentra wagon. I mean, as Chris Tudor said in his little first drive of it, it's just a Sentra with a really big trunk, and it rolls just as much as a Sentra, and it's underpowered like a Sentra, and it gets bad gas mileage like a Sentra. So it's not. It couldn't get over a twig, probably, if you set one in its path. So I don't know why it's being considered at that list, but the CX-9 gets the honor. I wonder how well it's selling. I'd like to look that up too. Mazda has just great vehicles, but it's kind of like Volvo, where they just don't seem to have the volume, despite all the accolades.
I see CX-9s all the time up there.
Do you? Oh, really?
Yeah, and I always, because when I come up behind them on the highway, I always think that it's an Acadia, because the CX-9 and the Acadia, or the Outlook, you know, flip a coin, they look very similar when you come up from the back.
Hmm.
And then I get next to it, I'm like, oh, it's a CX-9, and I think, that's not a bad-looking truck, you know?
Yeah. So I have the, speaking of like third row back seats, I had the Veracruz from Hyundai, and I'm going to write up a review of that soon. Its third row seat was actually very usable. I sat back there and was fine. It was not easy to get back there, though, but once you were back there, you had plenty of room.
And see, that's where the GM ones are, the Buick and the GMC and the Saturn. You simply get in and you walk to the back seat. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, really? Well,
oh, yeah.
I have the Audi Q7 right now, and its rear seats, I couldn't be more useless. I mean, the width of the third row bench is like a half a foot shorter on each side than the second row.
Sure, because are the wheel wells intruding on the sides?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. It's so unusable because it's not a very wide SUV anyway. I mean, it's very long and thin, but there's no headroom, no legroom. I wouldn't even put a kid back there, and that's obviously a much more expensive vehicle.
How much? What's the sticker on the one that you have?
I think it was like 65 or 70. It's the S line with the same 4.2 liter V8 as the R8, but it's detuned to 350 horsepower. But it's got some balls. You put it in sport mode. Audi sport mode is really good for its automatic transmissions. I put it there, and it's basically like you're saying you put it in sport mode, and instantly you get like fuel mileage drops into the single digits. I'm getting like 7, 8, 9. Because it just holds the gear forever.
It holds it forever.
It'll stay humming at 3,000 RPM all day long. It will not drop.
Yeah, and you can stomp on it and you have power.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a pretty fun vehicle, but at least an S-line trim, pretty impractical. All right, last story we're going to talk about is the death, at least in the U.S., of the Jaguar X-Type. A vilified vehicle, I think, on both sides of the pond.
Yes.
A vehicle. John did not know that the wagon was available in the United States until I IM'd him. I was putting the post together.
I didn't. And, I mean, why would I? Have you ever? I haven't even seen an advertisement.
It got coverage. It got media coverage when they launched the wagon.
I do not remember where.
Even my local paper carried some syndicated AP thing or whatever.
I don't remember anything in any car magazine about it. At all about the wagon coming to the U.S.
Suffice to say, I don't think it's going to be missed by many people.
No. I just won't be able to upgrade to something. It hurts. That's my only biggest complaint, to be honest.
Well, you know, it was a dumb idea to begin with. It was old Ford thinking, old Jaguar thinking that got them into a hole, and now they have to dig themselves out with the Jaguar XF, which
has to replace two cars now.
Yeah.
Well, basically. The fact of the matter is, it was based on the Mondeo, right?
Right.
It was based on the. It was based on the Mondeo platform. It came out after Contour was gone, so it was based on the previous Mondeo platform. So, you know, some people think it was the same as people like labeled it like a Contour with, you know, Jaguar body, which I don't think is quite accurate.
It also had the Duratec V6s, though, right?
Yeah,
from Ford, which was
ultimately dropped the 2.5.
Yeah, and then they had the 3-liter, right?
Yeah, you had 2.5 and 3.0, and then five. You only had the 3-liter.
But, I mean, this is the problem people had with it. You're basically getting the same 3-liter engine that you're going to get in Ford's sedan for $20,000, and you're buying a Jaguar, and that's not right. You know, you've got to differentiate
it
somehow.
It was cramped inside. It was nice in that you had all that, you know, you had the wood trim and the leather and everything, but my understanding is that none of this stuff wears really well in that car.
It's, you know, it's a Cimarron effect. You know, just because you put wood trim and some creamy leather in a car doesn't make it a Jaguar any more than it makes it a Cadillac.
And the last iteration that we've had, the one that is going to be here that we'll keep receiving until March and then it simply stops coming. You know, they went out of their way to make it look like the XJ, and this is not an XJ.
The XJ is
a really nice car. And this is, so it's, you know, an X-Type.
So the X-Type is leaving March, and the XF is arriving March, and we've had reports that that Jaguar dealers are basically forming lines for the XF. Basically, you can come to them, put your deposit down, and you're in line to get one. They can't do markups. They can't sell it for, you know, way over cost, whatever. But they're basically, you know, people are already saying they want one. So the first batch that arrives, already gone. If you want one, you now have to wait for the second wave or two to arrive before you can get one. With the X type and the S type gone, the XF here, all we have to wait for is a new XJ. And if it has the same impact as the XF, even with a two car lineup, they're going to be doing 10 times better than they are right now, which is
basically. They have a three car because they still have the XK.
Oh, the XK. Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about that.
How did you forget that? Christ. I mean, that's...
Well, okay, first of all, the XK is about as good as it can get. It's awesome.
I'll tell you what, I have an XJ in my garage right now, and that thing is surprisingly awesome, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm really surprised you say that, because the XJ just seems to be the perpetual, like, fourth place finisher in every comparison test of large luxury cars.
Kicks ass. I have an XJR right now, and I'll try and get it up for Halloween week, you know, the review.
Yeah, but is it the XJR that kicks ass, or the 4.2-liter supercharged V8 that kicks ass?
Well, whatever, dude. All I know is this car that I have kicks ass pretty much across the board.
Try that engine in the XKR, and then you'll be beside yourself. It's awesome in that.
This thing is a muscle car when you want it to be. It's very quiet. It's not like it's a big boomy, you know, engine sound.
Yeah, that's like in the XK. It's got like a deep bass, a little rumble. It's totally, totally pliable and compliant to driving around, and you mash that throttle and just...
Well, plus, this has the aluminum construction, so it's lighter than you would think for a car its size. I hope
they keep that for the XJ.
I really hope they do, too, because it makes a big difference, because this thing, at least by the seat of the pants measurement, it feels like it feels as ballsy as the S8 that I had. That's saying a lot.
That's like a 500 horsepower V10.
The 450. So figure 450? It's probably similar, because I have a feeling the S8 probably weighs a little more than this, because the S8's aluminum also, but I think the S8's a little bigger.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, nasty.
Well, the X type was nasty too, in a completely different way.
Not in the bad way.
In the bad way, and I think we're all glad that it's gone, and we have high hopes for Jaguar. We certainly don't want to see them fail. I mean, they're down to about 1,000 sales a month, and they might drop below that. I mean, just think, 1,000 sales per month. I mean, like, that's so small for an entire brand in one month.
Is that just in the U.S. or what?
And that's in the U.S. I mean, sure, they have sales elsewhere, but...
No, I can't figure as much, but do we know what they're...
Because Jaguar does better in Europe, doesn't it? I mean...
Yeah.
I would assume so, but I guess it's sad that in the biggest market in the world, you can only manage 1,000 sales a month. And probably in Europe, they're doing, you know, it's more of, you know, in like England, it's national pride, you know, buying Jaguar just so it doesn't go away.
Right. No, that's typical.
But as a side effect, if you buy an XJ or an XK, you're actually buying a nice car.
Yeah. No, the XK and... My apologies to Jaguar for forgetting it existed, but if every Jaguar could be as good as the XK, it would be a powerhouse, a force to be reckoned with.
I'm telling you, man, this XJ is unbelievable.
All right, well, I look forward to your review of it then, because I find it hard to believe, so convince me.
I'll convince you.
All right, well, that's about all we have for this week's episode. As always, I want to remind people that you can subscribe to the Autoblog podcast in iTunes. Just do a search for Autoblog, or take a look at the games and hobbies section and look under automotive and you'll find us. And please visit autoblog.com every day, where we have posts going up about as often as we can make them, almost every half hour of the day. So please come on the site, get addicted, come back often. And until next week, we'll have some more carnies for you, and everybody have a good one.
See ya
later.